What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
Ferrari got back to winning ways in Silverstone, but can this spark a comeback or will Red Bull win again around their own circuit this weekend? Hello and welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast, everybody. This is episode number 211, where we're going to be previewing the 2022 Austrian Grand Prix. I'm your host, George Howson, and joining me today, we have Aaron Harper from the Five Red Lights podcast.
Hello.
Phil Matthew from the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
And Owain Medford.
Hello.
So, lads, let's get into our predictions ahead of this race. Obviously, we had a hell of a race in Silverstone yesterday. It was a supremely entertaining one, some fantastic racing with these brand new cars. And we're heading to Austria, Aaron, where we've seen some very entertaining races in the past, for sure. I mean, what are your predictions, obviously, because Red Bull, they look quick. Ferrari obviously got back to winning ways as well. It's a tough one to call it. Who's going to come out on top in this one?
It should be a really interesting battle because as much as the Spielberg circuit is like 60 seconds to heaven, it actually offers up quite an interesting blend of corners and obviously the long straights. So you need the power to get up the hill and then across the top from turn three, which isn't really turn three. It should be turn two down to turn four. But then the middle sector, that's going to offer some really good opportunity for a car that's well balanced and that has good downforce. So I'm expecting Red Bull to be mighty on the straights, but the straights aren't hugely long. It's about carrying momentum. So maybe a car like the Ferrari might be able to carry that speed a little bit more consistently. Not to say that Red Bull is rubbish, but I just think the Ferrari handles slightly better through corners and those longer corners might play to it. And also, where are Mercedes going to land in all of this? Are they going to turn up and again have insane race pace? Because obviously we saw yesterday that once the Mercedes gets up and running and gets heat in its tires, it's a bit of a train. It takes some stopping. So it's going to be one of those races that I think you're going to have to sit tight for a little bit and wait and see how things unfold. And it might be the last 15 laps before we really see the picture of what's going to happen.
Yeah, you rightfully point out Mercedes as well in that because they obviously had a very good weekend for one of their cars anyway. There's no real telling how George Russell would have done in that race. But Sir Lewis Hamilton had an excellent race at Silverstone. Had the cards fallen differently, Owain, he could have won potentially there. But Austria is a funny circuit for Mercedes. Even in the past when they've been dominant, they've not been particularly quick there. So how do you see them getting on this weekend? Because it's a track with a lot of undulations and they are, of course, a team that have really struggled with the porpoising too.
Yeah, like you say, it's kind of almost a little bit of a bogey track for them. You have Lewis Hamilton and sort of in qualifying, you know, having issues and Nico Rosberg as well, it's not one where some of their ones where they've been able to romp away. I'm really sort of unsure. I don't know how much undulation. I think, you know, we've been struggling all this year to get an idea of how the car is. How much undulation is too much undulation for it? What's the frequency that is going to be setting off the car and maybe getting porpoising and making it difficult to drive? I don't think we know. I don't think it's sort of one of those things where they're going to have to watch about bottoming out or anything like that and causing issues there. But I think the characteristics of the car sort of suit Austria quite well. If they can sort of take the downforce off and get those long straights, but still carry it through the corners. Mechanically, it looks, we saw it going into Brooklands over the weekend and it looked great. It looks so dynamic. You know, dynamically, it looked really good. It looked like Lewis could do exactly what he wanted with it. You know, on the same tyres, he was really placing the car exactly where he wanted, which I think is going to help in the second and third sectors specifically. I think it's just what, you know, obviously we're going from quite a flat track to one that's really got some elevation change on it. And I think that could maybe upset them. So I think it's, you know, there's promising signs there, but I don't think it's going to be one of the ones where they could sort of walk away with it.
It's a tough one for sure, isn't it? In the day, Mercedes not having a car that's particularly great in a straight line this year either, which would also play a part, because there's three relatively long straights around the circuit, all DRS straights as well, if it's like last year too. But Hamilton spoke in the press conference about after the race about how they're nearly there. They're not quite there in terms of getting a win, but they're nearly there, and it's definitely showing in how they've been performing. But let's just bring it back to the front again, and let's talk about Carlos Sainz, Phil, because he finally got his first win after about 150 starts. Could this be the start of potentially getting up there with more with the top three? Because he's only 11 points off of his teammate. And Leclerc as well, I think he drove excellently at Silverstone with a damaged car. He'll be very, very eager to get back to winning ways this weekend.
Yeah, George, he's going to be motivated after, I mean, the finger wagging from Bonato and all that nonsense from yesterday. Whatever you want to think of how he was acting in the car, the fact is he had a car that could have won this race yesterday in the British Grand Prix. By the time he got out front for three quarters of the race, he was a faster car. In the grand scheme of things, for Carlos Sainz getting over that hump, that huge hump that had been the big monkey on his back, and to finally go and get that first career pole, first career win at one of the legendary circuits and legendary races, means he's free to go. But I think it's as much to talk about the drivers as it is their equipment. Can Ferrari's equipment hold up at a circuit, you know, with the high elevation, like the sea level or high above sea level, that could make an issue. I know that that's a thing in Austria, of course, the elevation changes, the lots of on throttle time. Power unit issues have been a big part of what has affected Ferrari this year and why they're so far behind Red Bull. And it is Red Bull's circuit. Max Verstappen has taken to it very well through his entire career. Ferrari's job is to maximize their one lap pace and possibly give themselves position and then make a better start than they did yesterday, because obviously their starts were not great. They got away with it on the second start, but really, they need to have better starts. And I mean, Carlos Sainz is just on cloud nine. It doesn't matter. I think that momentum is going to drive him through this next month to drive better than he probably ever has. And maybe he'll be a little more aggressive. Maybe he'll try to do some things. What he's being asked to do is race against Sergio Perez, which is asking a lot considering how many years Sergio has been in this sport. His presence, basically being the domestique to Max Verstappen, he's going to sit there and do whatever he has to do to protect the lead guy. So having to go and compete, we'll see what happens with Ferrari. I think they'll do well in practice. They seem to do that every race. They'll do well in qualifying. But the real question will come on Sunday and whether they're able to actually hold up to the Red Bull duo at one of the Red Bull home races. So Verstappen's just rapid there. So it's going to ask a lot of Ferrari to actually be able to stand up there. But they had a good weekend, generally good weekend, especially on Carlos Sainz's side. Not so sure on the Charles Leclerc's side there by the end of the day. But they need to keep this positive momentum for him and try to let him go, in a sense, to keep points a little bit more competitive for second in the world championship, at least.
Yeah, Ferrari definitely needed to give Sainz more of a chance. I mean, some of the calls they were making, particularly the one the safety car restart, telling Sainz to get 10 car lengths back from Charles Leclerc. I thought that was the wrong call, to be honest with you. I'm glad that Sainz went against it, because it was very vindicated in what happened too. So yeah, potentially obviously reliability come into it as well. Austria is definitely a car breaker. I think Mercedes had a double retirement in 2018 when their car was absolutely bulletproof at that time, at least so it seemed. So you can definitely get some surprises in that regard. But yeah, let's bring it back to Red Bull. Let's talk about Red Bull going into their home race, their home track, the Red Bull Ring, of course, hosting the Austrian Grand Prix. I think personally in race pace, I think the Red Bull was the fastest car, Aaron, but circumstances went against them. Obviously Verstappen had his rear issue with his with a suspension, and Sergio Perez had his damaged front wing and sent all the way to the back, but he still finished in second place. And Verstappen, despite all that damage, despite the car apparently being undrivable, he still got points. So in a way, are they going into this one as the favourites?
Yeah, they're still going in as the favourites because they've shown over the first 10 races that they, majority of the time, have the strongest race car. The opening two or three rounds, it was fairly even. And in Australia, Ferrari had the package to deliver and Charles Leclerc did. But since then, it's been errors and a lack of straight line performance that has hurt Ferrari. And then the reliability factor has kicked in and sort of doubled down on it. And Red Bull have just been on a roll. And but for that damage to Verstappen's car yesterday, he would have run away with that race, I think. But ultimately, I think it's actually good for the championship that it just closes everything up a little bit. Not quite enough to keep it, you know, edge of our seat like it was last year, but there's always that threat. I mean, the Red Bull hasn't been bulletproof. Mercedes are the only team to have finished have had no mechanical failures out of the top three teams this season. Of course, George Russell didn't finish yesterday, but that was accident damage. So if we take the theory that the Austrian track is a bit of a car breaker because of the amount of time spent on throttle, Ferrari and Red Bull could be potentially having to scale back the amount that they are running the power units at. So that might affect straight line speed, which has been key to the Red Bull's performance this year. That all being said, I wouldn't be surprised to see them lock out the front row. But then again, I wouldn't be surprised to see them starting second and fourth, third and fourth, like they have been recently with Ferrari in the front, and then Red Bull coming strong in the race because they've had great race pace. And that would be a real fascinating duel to see around such a short circuit where it's 100 miles an hour, literally 100 miles an hour in terms of corners, all the time coming at you, how Ferrari and Red Bull manage that. And then if Mercedes are in the mix, how that then affects their strategy and what they do with Perez, what they do with Verstappen, because they've got both their drivers at the top of the championship. So you can't really say they should be favouring one over the other.
Yeah, and no, I totally agree. I mean, I feel like I said it before, I feel like it was unfair that they were favouring Charles over Sainz. I mean, you could argue potentially that Leclerc was performing better, but he had a damaged car, so it was always going to be slower at some point. So I feel like they tracked Sainz quite badly with that one. But how they continue is anybody's guess, because we know what Ferrari's opinion is when it comes to team orders and number two drivers. It's very clear number one and number two. That's not so clear. Going off of last year, obviously, Sainz beat Leclerc in the championship, and there's only 11 points now. That's what, fifth place, fourth place in a race? That's all there is between them so far. So there's not much in it at all. So Sainz deserves a fair crack of the whip. Wherever you'll get that, we'll just have to wait and see. These are the kind of races and the kind of situations where we'll see how Ferrari react to that. But let's move a little further down the grid. Let's go to the battle for fourth place. And just 6 points between McLaren and Alpine. McLaren just about leading Alpine after the British Grand Prix. It's a tight old battle, though. It's a titanic scrap between the two of them. But the thing is with McLaren anyway, and I say this, it absolutely pains me to say this as a McLaren fan, as a Daniel Ricciardo fan as well, but it seems like McLaren are fighting this battle with one hand tied behind the back. If Alpine had two finishes, which they could have easily done in the last race, they'd have been right up there. But at the moment, all McLaren's efforts are being personified by Lando Norris, Owain. And this could well be a race that changes that if Alpine gets two cars to the finish, because Daniel Ricciardo, again, 14th place, I think he was, 13th place, something like that. It's just not good enough.
Yeah, I feel sorry for them in some ways, but they've unfortunately ended up kind of with an Albon problem. You know, a few years ago at Red Bull, like you've got Lando, who is really just kind of showing everyone who's boss and making sort of a great showing. You know, let's put it this way: Lando Norris has all but 15 points. It's contributed all but 15 points of 25 points, sorry, I think, to McLaren's
total
this year.
It's 15.
It's 15. I got my maths right initially. I shouldn't have doubted myself. Yeah. But yeah, 15 points all but 15 points to McLaren's total this year. I think that speaks volumes for, you know, we're halfway in through the season now, or we'll be heading towards it very, very soon. And that's just not good enough. It's just absolutely not good enough. Like, what are McLaren to do? If, like, McLaren really are in danger of falling into the clutches of Alpine here, when they should have broken 100 points by now. Yeah, they've had some issues and I've been worried about them, but to be honest, in the last few races, they've looked racier and racier. Like, they're really getting on top of their car. They're really starting to move it forward. And they're stuck in that fourth place because, unfortunately, you know, you've got Daniel Ricciardo finishing in really awful positions. And I guess, yeah, you could say the car before wasn't to his liking, but we've got a brand new car that really should be, they should have been able to design around both him and Lando. And he's really just not performing with it. And there's nothing I see that is going to be changing that at Austria. I think to really sort of take the fight, basically take the fight away from Alpine and Renault, because they're so close that, you know, a non-finish for Lando Norris or you know, a particularly good weekend for Alpine is gonna really hurt them. You know, Daniel Ricciardo really needs to buck his ideas up at this point, because it's just simply not good enough.
You're right, it's not good enough. I mean, sometimes, you know, he's been unlucky at times, absolutely. But at the end of the day, you look at his performances compared to Lando Norris, and it's just not fair. It's not quite as bad, but it's almost as one-sided as the Gasly v. Tsunoda battle from last year. And, you know, the stats just a very bad reading, you know. As you know, Lance Stroll, quite rightly, has come under a lot of criticism this year for not performing enough. He scored on three occasions this year for Aston Martin, one of the worst cars on the grid. Ricciardo scored in two races. I don't need to say any more, really. It's just simply not good enough from Ricciardo. And that's coming from a fan. That's coming from a place of love. It's just not working out. It's just absolutely not working out. And it shows such a little sign of changing, really. It really is not good enough. And yeah, we rightly point out that that Alpine are in great form, and especially Fernando Alonso, Philly. He had a bit of a slow start to the season. He had been unlucky, but what a race at Silverstone to finish in fifth. I mean, he was even challenging Hamilton for fourth in the closing stages. So how do you see him and Ocon getting on this weekend?
I mean, it depends. I kind of look at their situation. I think for Alonso, he's been running very consistent. The whole Oscar Piastri thing hanging over their heads and notwithstanding, he's saying, yeah, I can still do this. I think what he believed he was going to have relative to what has actually occurred, I think he was hoping to be up against the top three teams more competing, but it hasn't really worked out that way, unfortunately. But being best of the rest, running against McLaren, they had good pace yesterday. The Ocon minus, I mean, of course, the Ocon retirement led to Alonso being able to make more of his situation for sure yesterday at Silverstone. But he's been running solid here last few weeks, and we made all the jokes about him being a taxi cab at Monaco, but the fact of the matter is he's been the faster driver. He's been the better driver. He's been qualifying well. He qualified second in mixed conditions in Montreal. There's just a different energy there. It's not the same Fernando Alonso of yesteryear where, you know, two-time world champion and all those Grand Prix wins. But the fact of the matter is maybe he can take a little bit of solace from his compatriot going and getting his first career pole and win. Maybe it'll give him a little bit more juice with their car and their team. I know that, of course, you have the French Grand Prix coming along too, so a home race for the team. They want to finish out this first half of the year on a positive level, and considering that theoretically they're going two against one because of the issues for Ricciardo, it's time to maximize those points at any circuit to put themselves in a position. I think Ocon hasn't done as well qualifying, and then in turn his race pace at times has not been great. But then I brought it up yesterday in the post-race show. I'm like, well, that was similar to last year, and then Hungary happened. So we know that he's capable of doing something and being up front and being able to hold up against great drivers. So maybe, you know, that swift kick in the butt, just a brutal, you know, falling out of the race, losing points, maybe that may be it. It may give him an opportunity to go and follow Fernando up there and try to maximize double points finish, which I would figure is a possibility for them this weekend relative to their car and who they're going against.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm just looking at the results from this season. When Alpine score points, which is pretty much every race, they do score points for both drivers quite often as well. So it's not uncommon for Alonso and Ocon to be quite close to each other on the track. They're both egging each other on. They're both doing really well this season. And on current form, they're heading for fourth place, especially with McLaren making some pretty crucial errors like they did with the pit stop with Norris. So that cost him a place to Alonso in the last race, which, you know, that's a four-point swing effectively there. So, we just mentioned the guys who are fifth in the Constructors' Championship. So I'm going to mention that if you give us a five-star review on iTunes, we'll give you a shout-out at the start of the show, and you'll be entered into a draw to win some free merchandise as well. So, guys, get doing it. Get some reviews in for us, because it really does help us. And obviously give us a review on Spotify as well. I think we've got over 100 potentially, or something ridiculous like that on Spotify, which is just massive, really. Thank you so much for that. That really does help us out in the rankings. So let's go to Alfa Romeo next. Now, they're not out of this battle for fourth either, especially with the pace and the results of Valtteri Bottas this season. But double retirement in Silverstone, they lost quite a bit of ground because of that. But again, Aaron, the pace is there. And credit to Grandjean, obviously, thank God he's all right after that horrific crash that he suffered. I mean, I was at the Silverstone Grand Prix, and the press center just went silent for ages because we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know if he was all right. But thank God he's all right. The halo saves another life there for sure, without a doubt. So hopefully he'll be all right to run this weekend. And Alfa Romeo has shown some great pace, especially in qualifying. Aaron, how do you see them getting on this weekend?
I think they'll be just behind the McLaren and Alpine battle. The Alfa seems to have settled in that sixth best position. From time to time, they're troubled by the AlphaTauris, but for some reason, the AlphaTauris just don't seem to be able to get it together on a consistently enough basis. And Alfa Romeo have been strong at almost every race this weekend. And the fact that now they've got Zhou Guan Yu actually outperforming Bottas at certain points is really, really important. So I know he had that massive accident yesterday, and thank the Lord that he is absolutely okay. But his qualifying performance on Saturday in the wet and his performance the week before in Canada, he can take great heart from that. And Austria bears some similarities to Canada in terms of the speeds and some of the corners. And if you go well at Canada, you can go well at Austria. It's not obviously a given, but he can take some confidence in that. And I think Bottas is leading that team so well. I know he didn't have a great time yesterday with the gearbox failure, but he's just got a new lease of life, hasn't he? It's Bottas, you know, with the mega porridge and everything. So he's going great guns there, and he just looks so much happier and free. And it's like the Bottas that we saw at Williams at times, and thinking, oh God, this guy could be a world champion. Get him in a world championship winning car, but there's no point because we've already seen what he can do there. So he's in a good place. He's leading the team well. Zhou is coming on strong. Alfa are in a very, very good position. And I'm going to have to leave you guys now because I've been given the heads up to go and make dinner. So thanks for having me. I'll listen to the rest of the podcast tomorrow when it comes out, and enjoy the rest of the show, everybody.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, absolutely. You have to attend to priority number one there. So we will leave you to do that. Thank you for joining us.
No problem. See you guys soon.
See you later. Aaron made some great points there. Yeah, Alfa Romeo massively improved. Valtteri Bottas massively improved. So it could be a good weekend for them for sure. And like I said, Grandjean is apparently all right. We saw him walking around at the end of the race. So hopefully he'll be able to compete safely this weekend as well. And let's move on to the other AlphaTauri. And now they've been slipping away. I mean, I think they got seventh last year potentially in the constructors as well, but they're not anywhere near the top six. They are looking more likely to slip down to eighth or ninth at this rate, especially when their two drivers collide with each other, which, I've said that Tsunoda's been much improved this year, and he has, but he's had a really poor couple of races.
Yeah, that moves some active inexperience, really. I'd put the blame on it mostly. You know, Gasly wouldn't have spun had it not been for Tsunoda going in and having to sort of bail out with the last second. In the words of Martin Brundle, it was a day late and a dollar short. That ruined. You know, I don't know whether that affected Gasly's race when it comes to reliability, but it certainly hurt Yuki Tsunoda's, and it had already started off not great. I mean, you can't put the full blame on Tsunoda, I think, for what happened to him at the start, neither with Gasly as well. That was a sort of disappearing wedge. Unfortunately, it's been a bad weekend and they need to sort of have a reset. But unfortunately, it's a tale of two drivers, because actually, no, it's not even that in the driver's standings, because they're both on roughly the same points, and, you know, 5 points either way, that's a seventh or an eighth. They really do look like, bearing in mind how the Haas was performing this weekend, actually, it's really looking like they could slip backwards. Hopefully they have a better run of it. Again, it's kind of one of their home tracks, obviously being funded by the Red Bull. But again, there's the issue of, you've got a Red Bull powertrain. That's a little bit suspect, we've seen. It could be an issue. And this one's a car breaker. It's one of this weekend is a car breaker. And as we've seen with Max Verstappen this weekend, you know, you damage the underfloor of these cars and it really hurts you on that lap time. It takes a car that, you know, was, you know, second place and really dominating in the hands of Sergio Perez, for example, and puts it slow enough that, Max Verstappen thought he had a puncture and or suspension damage. I think that it's just one of those things where I think Gasly will avoid that sort of thing, but I don't really know with Tsunoda. I think he could potentially push it too far and, you know, the car breaker effect comes in. And it's another bad weekend, and I just think it's these knocks to his confidence that aren't helping. Unfortunately, you know, we thought he was improving, but like I say, with the incident where he did hit Gasly, that's rule number one of what you don't do. You don't run a move like that into a corner like that, unless you think you've absolutely got it done. I think that Tsunoda needs a good weekend. AlphaTauri needed a good weekend. But I don't think they can be guaranteed. I don't think they're nailed on for that right now.
Oh no, they're definitely not. They're looking pretty shaky for sure. I mean, they're only 7 points ahead of Pass, so they're really not looking good this season, AlphaTauri. So it's always a difficult one with AlphaTauri, because they are the bona fide second team. I mean, people talk about Haas being a second team, Ferrari and Alfa Romeo being a feeder team. These are a proper feeder team. You know, their goal is not necessarily to get amazing results. It's to give young drivers a platform to do well, basically, you know. And yeah, then they're not looking good. Tsunoda with a very poor move to do what he did, and obviously finished last in that race. Gasly retired, you know, a non-score for them when they really needed some points, especially with like the results of the Haas as well, Phil. They're looking, after a long time, they're looking back on form. I mean, Mick Schumacher finally getting some points, challenging Max Verstappen to the line. It was fantastic to see from the young man. And obviously K-Mag getting a point as well in 10th, their first double points of the season. They've got some real momentum behind them. And this Austria is a track that has treated them very well. I think they got a fourth and fifth there in 2018, I want to say. Their best result in F1. So are more points on the cards this weekend?
I would think they'd hope so, George. I mean, the great momentum from yesterday, maximizing the situation of a lot of DNFs, but also having a car that had some pace. I mean, Mick looked like his dad out there, and it was great to see how aggressive he was, and fact that the world champion was driving in the same way he drives Lewis Hamilton, notwithstanding. The fact is, he got his first career points. Kevin Magnussen gets points. Though AlphaTauri, as you and Owain were talking about, they're very in danger right now. You know, I think Haas is a team with the positive momentum they got going on. I think they're very track specific right now, and because of the amount of upgrades they can bring, they might need to maximize their situation early in the season, because I'm not sure what's going to happen later in the year. But I know Mick is going to be very, very happy and take that positive momentum here through this pre-summer break period. I mean, Kevin Magnussen has brought a stability to this team. I think Q2 is a possibility for sure. They're on the periphery of points if everybody is able to last. Of course, now if cars break down, the Haas seems to be a little better than some of the other cars in regards to reliability, minus, of course, the Ferrari power unit stuff. But if they can finish, I think points, at least some points would be on the offer. And considering AlphaTauri is not exactly the most consistent team and they're not doing so great at the moment, that's their battle, really. So kind of mirroring what they're doing or doing a little better than them kind of keeps them in the mix. They're on that next tier, really, of teams. I guess we think about it, they're on the third tier list in regards to the constructors. So we'll see what happens with that. But it's a great weekend for them. It didn't go so well for them on the NASCAR side. So at least on the Formula One side, it went well.
Yeah, very good day from Silverstone for sure. I'm so happy for him finally getting points as well. It's been well overdue. He's made some mistakes, but you know he's got points now, and hopefully he'll kick on from there because he does have some serious talent. We all know who his dad is, so you know there's definitely potential there. So they overtook Aston Martin into eighth place there. So Aston Martin back down to ninth in the constructors' standings, only 2 points behind Haas though, and. Again, they score points. Vettel getting a ninth place. He kept his nose clean. Lance Stroll just on the edge of points again in 11th. But it all depends how the car performs around this track going, because they have had some reliability issues. As obviously, we keep saying this is a car breaker. This is a very tough track on the cars. So how do you see them getting on this weekend? Because in the past, tyre wear has proved crucial. We do see quite a few safety cars here, and Aston Martin are normally a team that benefit from that.
Yeah, it's obviously, as you say, it's a high drag circuit in Austria. Again, luckily, that's a good thing about that is that Canada, unusually cold this year, but is a sort of a good allegory for that. The only issue I see is that they're right on the periphery of the points there, and they have been, and they were in Britain as well. And honestly, qualifying absolutely diabolical for Aston Martin, they really benefited from how this race was, from how they were in Silverstone, and what the race was like. I'm not seeing, you know, we're looking at raw speed here, and raw speed is something that you absolutely need when it comes to Austria. I think it's always better to be in front and going backwards through the pack, maybe sort of metering your way backwards through the pack than trying to make your way forward. And I kind of don't think Aston Martin can do it. I think they've obviously got quality drivers, but, you know, and as much as the cars didn't really fall their way in some ways, they've still not had a sort of a great showing thus far. We could get rain in Austria, which could hamper them again. Obviously, I'm not putting too much into that. But I think they could find Haas going away from them if Haas continue their current trajectory. So I'm a bit unknown with Aston Martin. Yeah, they could do well, but I personally doubt it.
Yeah, they got potential for sure, especially in the hands of Sebastian Vettel. But I know what you mean. It's not particularly likely they'll get points. With the weather we just mentioned there as well, I've looked at the forecast. It does say there's a chance of rain, but whether it's particularly likely or not, we don't know. But again, going off of Silverstone, you can't predict this because it said it was going to be dry on Saturday and it absolutely lashed it down. So you don't know what's going to happen. Let's move on to Williams. Bottom of the pile still, unfortunately, and it's really difficult to see them get anywhere else other than that. The only possible upside to the home Grand Prix was the fact that Latifi got off the bottom of the standings. He's up to 20th now. Well done. You've passed Hülkenberg. But in all seriousness, though, he did have a good qualifying session. Williams' first Q3 appearance of the season and his first Q3 appearance as well. And he held in the points for a lot of the race. But still, Phil, that can't really mask what's been a dismal season for Williams. But the one bright spark is Alexander Albon. If he finishes the race, he's usually at the edge of the points, and very occasionally he gets in them.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, his race was done on a few hundred meters in yesterday, but they and their upgrade package barely got any running, so that was a big disappointment for them. But the fact that, and also mentioned that yesterday too, you know, we're I'm an equal opportunity offender in regards to people who are not great. I mean, in regards to Latifi, he actually had a great weekend. Might have been the best weekend he's had in his whole entire Formula One career. And when you consider that, you know, three of the young junior Williams drivers all had great weekends as well at Silverstone, and there's been rumors with Oscar Piastri, that's what you need. It took the old car, got into Q3, stayed up there most of the day. I think that Ocon safety car was one of the people that paid the worst price in regards to that. He could have possibly gotten points out of that race. He was in eighth for a lot of it. You know, I think that's a positive for him. Who knows what the rest of the season holds for him, or if he's going to be in this car post, you know, summer break or whatever. But that's a positive sign. It shows there's life. It shows that he's still got some motivation. It shows that he wants it still. Albon's weekend never really got started. It's a track now you're going to that he has plenty of experience at. He's done well at before when he was in the Red Bull main team. Maybe these new you know, bits that they have on the car will help them. But they are, of course, at the back of the queue again this year. It's going to be hard for them to make up that many points to get to Aston Martin, honestly, based on pace, based on their qualifying, unless something weird, you know, something crazy happens, like what happened with George last year when he started going on a run of Q3s and getting those points in, and of course getting the second place at Spa. I have a hard time believing that's going to happen again, but Albon has done a solid job. He's been a good leader. The team doesn't seem out of complete sorts. The car is not great, yes, but, you know, there seems to be something of you know, to work with. Now, who's going to lead them? How is this going to go as we get through the rest of the season? That we'll find out. I mean, it'll be very hard for them to make. I think Albon might be able to make Q2. From there, of course, if attrition happens, it'll play in their favor. Otherwise, if it is just a straight up race where nothing really happens, they'll just be out there getting data, unfortunately, and kind of getting lapped, which is an unfortunate thing, but it's kind of what Williams has become.
Yeah, no, I echo everything you say there, Phil. It is unfortunate what Williams are these days, but you're right. The team has some togetherness. There is some cohesion there. And, you know, despite the car not being the best, they do look like a team and they are together. So they could get their way out of this for sure. But, you know, it's just, I don't think it's going to happen this year. I think they're kind of destined to get bottom in the standings. But it's a good point you mentioned about Albon as well. I forgot how good he was around this track. He could have won here in 2020 if he didn't have the incident with Hamilton, of course. But yeah, so they could be on for a good result today, this weekend. My apologies for that. So yeah, those are all the 10 teams. Those are all the 20 drivers. We talked about them all. Before we get into our predictions, though, I'm just going to give a mention that if you want to support us some more financially, you can, of course, go on to our Patreon.com/F1Chronicle, or you can check out our store as well, where we got merchandise, including mugs, T-shirts, hoodies, all that good stuff. Just head over to F1Chronicle/store. So let's go into our predictions. Let's go for our top three first before we go into the bold predictions. So I'm going to say, because he's done quite well, I think in 2019, he could have quite easily won had there not been a controversial incident. I'm going to go for the interest of the championship as well. I'm going to go for Charles Leclerc for the win. I'm going to go for Max Verstappen behind him. I'm going to go for a reinvigorated Carlos Sainz in third. Bit of a boring prediction, but I'm going to go with realism for this one. Owain, what's your podium prediction?
Mine's in a similar vein for the championship, because it sorely needs it at this point. You know, with Red Bull really taking the positives out of a really bad day. So I'm going to go with shock double retirement, meaning that we have Charles Leclerc on the front on the top step of the podium, and then Carlos Sainz, and George Russell coming in third place.
So your shock double retirement is the Red Bulls, I take it then?
Yes, of course. Yeah, sorry. Mm. Otherwise, they'd be probably front row, taking first and second, unfortunately.
Looks like it on pace, definitely. So, yeah, Phil, what's your top three prediction?
I figure Verstappen goes back to his usual ways and gets the victory. I will go with Charles Leclerc in second. And for third place, I will say Lewis Hamilton again, keeping the positive momentum he's had in recent races. So we'll get one of each on the podium. That'll be my picks.
Fair enough, fair enough. So, bold prediction time. I would have loved to give my bold prediction to Lando Norris for a podium because he does quite well here, but I'm not going to hedge my bets. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay consistent with my top threes. I'm going for a lot. I'm not going to get it. I'm going to go for a lot. Bold prediction. So I'm going to say, it's not that bold, but I'll say that we'll get the Haases both in the top six in qualifying at least. And I'm going to go for K-Mag getting top six in the race. I think they'll do quite well here. They do quite well here overall in the past. Wayne, you've already given us your bold prediction with the Red Bulls retiring. You can have another one if you want, though. Feel free.
I'm always a quitter. I'm gonna go with Lewis Hamilton's first win of the season in a Mercedes 1-2.
So you've gone completely against your front. He's edging his bets. He's edging his bets.
Is it really hedging my bets when both of them are equally unlikely to happen?
Technically, yes. But anyway, we'll let that slide. Phil, what's your pole prediction?
Vettel gets into Q3 and gets a top six finish in the race with the Aston Martin.
I like that. I like that. That'd be cool to see for sure. You never know. There could be a big pile. There could be a big accident for sure around this track. It's I think, what was it, 2020, where we had 11 finishes out of 20, something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he came back and everyone forgot how to build a racing car. Yeah.
Yeah. We waited 9 months, whatever it was, for an F1 race, and boy, did we get a cracker when it came back. Look, hopefully, we'll see a repeat of that kind of craziness this weekend. But I want
top 10 races every single week now. Like, you know, if Silverstone has proved exactly what race Formula One racing can be.
Absolutely. You know what? Yeah. I mean, it has proved it. I think the track definitely helped and these cars definitely helped too. But I think there should be some really close racing this week, and the DRS is going to be strong around here. So there's going to be a lot of passing, a lot of close racing. I'm hoping. In theory, that's what it should be. Let's see what happens with that. So I'm just going to give you guys both a chance to plug your outlets. So Phil, I've mentioned that you're part of the Gripship podcast. What is that and where can people find it?
Yeah, the Gripship podcast is, we are on Podbean, of course. That's where we distribute our show. And I forgot to go and promote us yesterday, so I'll go and give the handles that we have. We're at Gripstrip Pod on Twitter. My co-host JP Huffine is JP Huffine on Twitter. Mine is Philip G. Matthew on Twitter. And basically anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find the Gripstrip Podcast. We talk about all things motorsports, four wheels, two wheels. If it goes fast, we talk about it on the Gripstrip Podcast generally. We have a YouTube page. We upload our shows on there as well. Gripstrip Podcast page on YouTube. And we're also on my website, philipgmatthew.com, which was blog site. We also post all the shows on there. So give us a like, listen, download the whole bit. Let us know what you want to hear. See if there's anybody we can kind of ask around and maybe sneak a interview here and there. But we'll be busy tomorrow doing our show talking about the first-time winners in the world of motorsports, which there were a few. So we'll talk about that on episode 122 of the Gripstrip podcast this week. So thanks, George and Owen and Aaron, of course, had to leave. But, you know, thanks to everybody and Aiden as well for the great work you all do and for inviting me on.
Oh, always welcome, Phil. Yeah, definitely go check out the Gripstrip podcast. I've been on the GSB and it's a hell of a show. You know, it's a great show that covers a lot of different bases. And happy 4th of July as well to you, Phil. I've not said that yet. Thank you for coming on what's a special day for you guys. So, Owain, how about you? What do you want to promote? You do some meme articles for Sportlight, but they might be migrating to another website soon, potentially. I'll let you know more about that another time.
Yeah, so for I've got to change my spiel now. I do apologize though, because I have not done one in such a long time, because I've always been snowed under with work.
It's fine. Join the club.
Believe it or not, doing a PhD, quite a lot of work. So unfortunately, I have lost a lot of my evenings. But if you'd like to see my ramblings on Twitter, I'm at Owain Medford. Or one word, basically. I retweeted one thing today, specifically talking about the Halo, which Anthony Davison made some excellent points on Sky F1 about, and the fact that the row hoop should not have disintegrated. But yeah, if you'd like to sort of, I guess, relive the 2020 season in a 2021 season in a lighter look, we kept it as a sort of a sanctuary, and that's available on sportlightpro.com currently. Subject to change, I assume.
Those will still be on there. Those aren't moving, but yeah. So we'll announce more of that another time. But yes, those meme reviews definitely shed a lighter look on what was at times a very toxic season online with the F1 community. But that definitely showed what the internet can be used for and should be used for. Good memes. So yes, yeah, so be sure to give us a like on Facebook. We are F1 Chronicle, and Twitter as well. We are at F1 Chronicle. Search up on TikTok as well. I do a weekly 60-second video going over a topic in Formula One, and obviously I mentioned that I went to the British Grand Prix this weekend. So if you get the chance, do submit a question on there. You can ask me anything about my experience there, because I had a great time, and going as press for the first time as well was something I'll never forget. So yeah, if you want to know anything about that, because I had a lot of questions, I didn't know what to expect, just hit us up with a question on there. I really would appreciate that. And we're also available, of course, on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Verbal, Omni Studio, Pocket Cast, and the F1 Chronicle website itself, f1chronicle.com. I want to thank my panelists for coming on this week. Very much appreciated, as always.
Thanks a lot, as always.
Absolutely, never a problem.
And yes, we'll be back at the weekend on Saturday, about an hour after qualifying finishes, to analyse qualifying for the Austrian Grand Prix. Thank you very much for joining, and we'll see you for the next one. Bye-bye.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.